welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today I'm sitting down with David Gaubert, CEO of multi-state operator Air Wellness, to discuss the difficulties in retail, newly emerging markets, and what we can expect in the coming year. This conversation was recorded in person on November 28th, 2023.
Things are shifting massively right now within the industry. You guys being an MSO, being in so many different states, I believe you guys are in what, five or six states now?
We're in, you can say we're on seven states going for eight.
Seven states going for eight. You guys have an interesting perspective on the industry. What are you seeing right now as far as consumer trends are going? Obviously, we've seen kind of edibles make a resurgence, post-pandemic dog walkers making resurgence. What are you guys seeing?
So from a product standpoint, we can talk customers as well and maybe difference between the markets, but from a product standpoint, what we see is flower is still dominating, but slightly down or trending slightly down, but it's not a new trend, right? You still see the vapes and concentrates in there. I'd say you're talking about edibles. I think edibles is still a growing market and something where we see more potential into edibles and also in a way to reach new customers, actually. You're talking about dog walkers and pre-rolls. That's still, I'd say, part of the market that's doing very well and an easy pickup, if you want, that sure. We see. And that for that one, I'd say it depends really market by market also on what we see and where we see, I'd say, pre-rolls versus flower versus maybe more in other categories like edibles or tincture and stuff like that. So it varies market by market, but also maybe urban or downtown versus other places.
Well, let's look regionally. So, here in Clark County, obviously the West Coast, what are you kind of seeing within the Nevada market as a whole? Definitely a tourism driven market here in Clark County. Are you seeing a differential between, say, tourism markets and general markets where people aren't coming in from out of state?
Yeah.
And what are some of those differences that you're seeing?
So the interesting thing for us in Nevada is that we're actually, our consumer base in Nevada is mainly locals. We're not that much of a tourist market. We have one store that is more tourist driven, I would say in Nevada, but the others are really into the locals and locals market, which by the way, I think correspond well to who we want to be and what we want to be as a company. Meaning I keep saying that we want to be the store that's in the neighborhood and that we know our customers, they know us, and we build relationships. And to do that, it's really more towards, let's say, locals than it is for from a tourist standpoint. So we're very much local driven. And then in that case, the difference in trends, you'd say, is that tourists are going to be much more into the kind of what I was saying, the easy pickup or something that they can enjoy immediately and that makes it the pre-rolls and stuff like that much easier versus maybe flower or a population that will be more into the edibles, tincture and stuff like that, that are more for the benefit that they're going to get from it from a health standpoint. But that's it. We're very much focused to that local community and how do we serve our local customers.
Well, one of the things that's going to shift here in Clark County and the state of Nevada as a whole is you're seeing social use licensing going out. You're seeing social consumption license starting to come online first, second quarter of 2024. Yeah. Do you believe that that's going to shift consumer focus as far as product demands and in a categorical approach? Or do you think that that's going to still stay the same and people are just going to adopt it for social use lounges?
Yeah. Now, I think it's going to be actually adding on more than changing the base of the consumption. So I think it's going to be a great new ways of adding on and a way to get a different experience. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to change the fundamental of the consumers and how they're going to use the products, appreciate the product. So I see that more as another avenue or a new avenue, if you want. But not something that's going to change the base of how people are consuming.
Well, when you're looking at here in Clark County versus other places in the United States, obviously people in the Las Vegas region kind of went very, very big and large with dispensary experiences. When you're kind of looking at layouts here versus, say, in other parts of the country, what are some kind of KPIs that you had to hit when you're making sure for a new build that you're meeting that consumer demand for this particular market versus a different one?
I think that what we're looking at, and it's connected to what I was saying about we want to be that store in the community and that store in the neighborhood that's connected with the customers, it's very much finding places, finding ways for us to connect with these customers and being the place where we can serve a community that's around. So it's a bit different than saying, hey, we want to be super close to the strip, or we want to be in a place that's going to be easily accessible by tourists. That's great. But for us, it's very much finding those places and ways of truly connected and staying connected with the customers.
Well, and again, going back to product differentials per market, obviously in California, where I'd moved from, heavy on the macrodose side of things. What are you guys seeing across the spectrum as far as product usage between macrodose and microdosing? I mean, obviously, edibles, definitely a giant leap between one side to the other.
Yeah.
What are you guys seeing as far as your sale trends?
So what we see in the sales trend in a general way is that, well, we're in the middle of a situation in the U.S. that is, I'm not going to say it's a recession, but it's a moment where people are very, very careful about their spend and very careful about how much they can spend. At the same time, they come as often. They really want to consume as much, but they're going to look at it in a way where they get really the most they can for their bucks. And so we see that both in terms of overall basket that people have, so they may take a bit less products, and at the same time, they're going to go for the things that have more dosage, if you want, as well. That's going to give them, again, more bang for their bucks. And so we see that happening. At the same time, I think that there's a part of the consumer, a part of the population that's looking at the same time as some specific effects that they want to get. That plays maybe more also in some micro dosage and looking at different cannabinoids forms or different things that they're going to want to consume. So I think that's two directions, if you want. On one side is that one on, hey, I want to get the most I can get and somehow can be more playing in that macro versus the other side.
Well, we've seen, kind of a shift in trends in consumer appetite as far as THC percentages. A lot of people are now looking at terpene profiles mm-hmm. versus overall THC content. As you kind of see a reduction in people's willingness to spend during a recession, do you believe that kind of consumer mindset might start to shift back to THC percentages, or do you believe that there's been a tipping point where it's going to keep going towards terpenes?
So I think that the California may be different than most of the other states or other places from that standpoint. And maybe, unfortunately, we're still seeing in a lot of markets that the dominant factor is THC. And there are some markets where we see more maturity from terpenes and really an interest in terpenes. I'll cite Pennsylvania, for example. Out of all market is a market where we know that we have to really provide higher level of terpenes and more information, actually, whether it's on the website or through our bartenders, about the terpene profile of the products. But there's most other places, it remains very much driven and pushed by the THC level.
Well, there had been, 55 plus had been kind of the dominant growing demographic for cannabis for several years. Is that still true? And if that is still true, what products are you seeing as far as a market trend for that demographic? Are you still seeing, them staying away from flower and maybe staying more towards effects-driven edibles, or are they just going with the general consumer market?
No, I think that's very true what you're saying about that trend on the 55 plus. I would say on rather less on flower, more on edibles, more on tincture, more on even balms and things like that, as well as vape. But maybe not diving as much to the flower category as other customers. So when I was talking about the continued growth of edibles, continued growth of the other form factor, I think it's very much linked to the fact that the consumption for the more senior population is playing a big part into that.
Well, speaking of the senior population, continuing on that, Florida, you guys have a massive presence yep. presence in the Florida market. Just about every single executive that I've talked to, either CEO or founder of a dispensary line that's looking either to go MSO or is currently MSO, is over the moon about the Florida market, potentially going recreational. Governor DeSantis famously said that he would veto any cannabis legalization that's adult use. What do you see as the future of the Florida market? And do you see an adult use legalization in that state within the next 5 years?
Yeah. So yes, we're very penetrated in the Florida market. I mean, we have 7 states, soon to be 8 states. Florida is our number one state. That said, it's not hugely higher than number 2 and number 3, meaning if we talk about Nevada, for example, or New Jersey, or other states are super important for us as well. But yes, Florida is number 1. Very excited by Florida today already, and as a medical market and the potential of that market as a medical market. But of course, moving into that into an adult market, it would be and will be huge for our company. Right now, from a how do we feel today about that? How do I feel today about it? I am cautiously optimistic that it will go into the ballot in November 24. Meaning, we'll see how that goes. We had those. I mean, conversations were just happening at the Supreme Court. We don't have any idea yet of where that is, but we could say cautiously optimistic that it's going to go to the ballot in November 24. The one thing to I think for everybody to have in mind is that to pass it needs to be 60%, whereas Ohio, for example, that just passed, which is also an awesome market for us, and we're so excited about that. But yeah, no, really, that's going to be top 3, if not the number 1 priority of our company in 2024, is being ready for really that market and all the potential of that Ohio market. But back to Florida, it needs to be 60%, right? So it's way more than 50. I mean, I'm saying the obvious, but it's way more than 50. So I think the efforts that we're going to have all to make in 24, granted we get the approval from the Supreme Court to go to the ballot, it's going to be on making sure that we hit that 60%. Now, Ohio was at 57. I think that historically we saw that even when it turned medical, that Florida was voting pretty high on making that happen already. So we have some confidence that it will happen, but we also realize that the whole industry is going to have to work together in 24 to make that a reality. And that's what we're preparing for. Mm-hmm. And so I'd say cautiously optimistic of that happening. And game changer in a way for our company, obviously, because when you look at Florida, when you look at Ohio and the third state, and I talked about it from a customer standpoint, but Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. those are 3 very important states for us. And I love repeating something about AIR, which is only 15 stores, I think, out of 89 stores today that we have are in adult markets. So that means that we have 6 times, if you want, potential with simply 3 markets turning adult, meaning Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Ohio happened from a vote standpoint, so now it's a matter of understanding how the regulation is going to change and the timing for all that. But again, probably one of the top 3 priority of the company for next year is preparing for that. Florida, we'll see what happens, but cautiously optimistic about that happening. And Pennsylvania, I mean, there's a very good chance that they're going to follow suit in 24 somehow. I mean, all this is more of a 2025 impact from a result standpoint.
Sure.
But it means that as a company, the year 2024 needs to be a year of preparing for it. So you could call that a transition year in a way. It's still the same grinding and the same cash focus that we need to be and cash preservation in 24, but at the same time, really preparing for that reality while expecting at the same time the change from a rescheduling that will happen from a 280E. So when you put all that together, very excited about what that means for the years to come and really using 2024 as that preparation year.
Well, Ohio is definitely going to be an incredible market. I mean, Michigan is one of the few markets that's been smashing sales records year over year. Indiana famously has nothing and it's right next door. Do you see Ohio flourishing to the point where Indiana is going to be forced to finally legalize it? Or do you think that they're going to be one of those holdouts that's just never cannabis in my state?
Yeah. Don't know. We're watching Indiana. Mm-hmm. When you look at the list of the states that we're actively looking at and making sure that we're ready, Indiana is part of that list.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's going to be pressure.
Yeah. Interesting outdoor grows in Indiana if that goes legal. farmland state. When you're looking at the totality of the United States, you had mentioned 280E famously. Safe banking and 280E have been the bane of the cannabis, regulatory cannabis existence. Will safe banking ever pass, or is cannabis legalization at the federal level going to come first?
So I don't know. Again, I don't
know. Oh, yeah, no crystal ball.
And maybe I have a perspective that's, I'm not going to say it's different, but I'm new to an industry, right? I just celebrated 1 year with AIR, and that's my first experience in the cannabis industry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still learning. but when the HHS announced that recommendation of moving cannabis from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3, of course, the first reaction of everyone and myself included at the beginning was, wow, that's awesome, 280, right? But then when you take a step back, my thoughts was, okay, great, 280, but the biggest thing that just happened is that maybe for the first time ever, there's a federal, I don't know if we call it decision, but at least movement that is pro-cannabis.
Right.
And that has so, to me, that's so important. And showing somehow a shift that is happening. So safe banking is part of that same shift. There's other things that are part of that same shift. And I don't know which one will rescheduling is likely to be the first one. But I think that there's a momentum that's different. And I'm new again to this. So I'm seeing it like this. And people that have been in this three, 5 years, 10 years, I'll be like, maybe been there, seen that. I don't know. But when I take a step back and I'm like, okay, what does it mean in terms of studying the plant from a medical standpoint and other things? I think it's huge.
Yeah.
That movement is huge. So
I know that a lot of people are also holding out for a possibility for a descheduling. Is there a potential that within the next 5 years, the United States kind of gets its act together, creates a federal legalization problem? And I know you don't have a crystal ball, but
no.
from your own personal thoughts, is this a possibility? Because, you know, as we have so many large companies here in the United States that are looking overseas at, you know, obviously Spain is exploding, Germany's mm-hmm. exploding, the NIH in England is starting to incorporate cannabis into their medical programs. I mean, even our neighbors to the north have a robust, you know, cannabis program. Are we losing in the United States to intellectual property overseas? And will this push finally actually happen? You know, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, one day or another, it will.
Sure.
One day or another, it will. Will it happen in the next 5 years? I mean, first, I don't believe in descheduling versus a rescheduling 3.
Sure.
I do believe in rescheduling 3. I don't believe in the short, medium term into a descheduling. But will that happen on a full legalization in the next... At some point, yes. is it going to happen in the next 5 years? What's going to be the next political environment a year from now? Yeah. You tell me, right? Well, I'm not sure we're going to see that happening in the next 5 years.
I was hoping to see that there is a possibility that maybe this initial touch from the federal government and Biden, you know, doing the pardoning would have kind of hopefully made it a political point at the federal level for the next candidate. Do you think that that's going to be completely left out of all of the debates and people are just going to kind of wipe it under the table for now because we're looking at things like the war overseas and stuff like that? Or do you think that eventually either this election cycle or the next election cycle, the cannabis will finally take that forefront and be the deciding factor for a candidate?
Well, I think that the things that are happening as we speak right now are showing that it's part of that conversation. Mm-hmm. Whether we're talking about what just happened in Ohio with the vote that was at the same time as the abortion vote, for example, in Ohio, and we linked the two, not necessarily from a result standpoint, but even from how many people went and vote and so on. I think that the timing of the potential rescheduling is also a timing that shows that it has let's say a political play. Mm-hmm. So all that would rather lead to the fact that yes, it's going to be part of the conversation. But to your point, there's so many things that can happen at the same time or that can change that who knows, right? But I think we all see what's happening from a timing standpoint.
Sure.
Which, by the way, leads probably us to be also optimistic about the rescheduling and 280E and the timing that should happen.
Well, looking forward for your guys' company, obviously Air Wellness, you had mentioned seven states looking at eight. If we did have federal legalization, is there particular markets that you would be more interested in than others and why?
Mm-hmm. So as I was, I think that 2024 is still a year of transition where if we put all together, right, and we get all the tailwinds that we're talking about, mm-hmm. I mean, 280 in place by, let's say, mid-2024, which will impact 2024, but even more 2025. The adult use passage in Ohio is already kind of done, but will happen by the end of the year, and let's say maybe Florida and Pennsylvania would follow. So when you put all that together, I think that what it means for us is, again, still a year of transition. In 2024, we'll be very focused on cash preservation and preparing for all the what is to happen, the great things that are to happen. And then when we turn to the end of, let's say, fourth quarter of 2024 and then 2025, then it changes the dynamic where on one side, I mean, we're in a different situation from a cash situation and cash generation situation. Obviously, part of that cash needs to be used to reduce the debt and pay down the debt and so on. But that gives us the opportunity, to your point, of also thinking of other use of that cash. And by then, the value of the company from an equity standpoint and so on will be also likely different. So that gives us more possibility by then on looking at other things. I think that we will still be looking at how do we invest further in the states that matter most to us. That's why I was talking about Ohio. You were talking about Florida. Totally agree. We can talk about Pennsylvania and so on. But at the same time, to your point, I think we'll be looking at states that make sense for us.
Sure.
So what does it mean for states that make sense for us? Let's say for one thing is we like states that have a disciplined regulation. And that's something that we take into account when you look at we look at states. I think that we're at the same time a retail company and a CPG company. And as a retail company, you need to make sure that your name is known enough and that your customers are traveling to the states that you're in. So when you look at our current footprint, it makes sense for us to be looking at states that make sense in that footprint. So what I mean by that is we're in Florida, we're in the Northeast, we're a bit in Midwest. So you can think of the states that are in between there that make sense for us. By the way, Nevada makes great sense for us because everybody travels to Nevada or comes to Nevada. And, of course, we love our locals here. So I'd say when we look at those states, it's a combination of discipline regulation, obviously potential from a size of the states and population, but it's also, do they make sense for us from a more business model, I would say, and making sure that it's a state where our customers will recognize our brands.
Well, and in looking kind of at you guys as both a CPG company and as a retailer, obviously very difficult to have house brands while being such a prolific retailer across several states. When you're looking at potentially getting into new categories with new house brands or creating subcategories within the house brands you already have, what are some things that you take into consideration when you're deciding when to launch and what to launch?
So I love that you're asking that question, because that's been something from the beginning coming into an industry where it's like, what is this business model where an MSO is at the same time a retailer and at the same time is growing and processing products, but also building brands? How do we make sense of that business model? And ended up pretty much saying, hey, our business model is to be at the same time a retailer. And we need to have a strong retail brand, Air Cannabis Dispensary, that's known across, but we're at the same time a CPG brand that needs to have brands that create equity or have equity, and obviously, I'd say, grow and process the products that correspond to that quality. And our business model is actually both at the same time, and how do we make sure that they feed each other? What I mean by that is, obviously, when you have a retail footprint, it's you can actually put your products and put your products in front of the customers, right? So in that sense, that makes sense. But also, if you build brands that are strong enough that you're going to distribute in wholesale to other cannabis dispensaries, whether it's other MSOs or independent dispensaries, then if you build brands that are strong enough and mean something, well, you're going to gain customers that actually you can also bring to your retail through that, because they're going to have their own, I would say, connection with our brand. So to me, there's a clear flywheel on being at the same time a retailer, where the only thing that matters is building customer relationship and building customers loyalty, and at the same time being a CPG company that really build brands. Sure. Now, when I say that, then the next thing we need to do is to look at ourselves and be like, okay, have we done that? Like, do we have brands that have equity, and what do we need to do on that front? And we're in the middle of a major, I'd say, transformation from a brand standpoint, where the idea for us is not to build brands that are only one category, but rather to have kind of a good, better, best strategy of three brands, but brands that go across categories. So if I take our core brand, which is the when I took the good, better, best, it's the better brand and it's Kind, pretty famous actually in Nevada and created in Nevada 10 years ago actually. Yeah. We see Kind as being a core brand that already has equity actually in Nevada, doesn't in much in the rest of the country, but that we can build on. But in order to build on, we need to make sure that across form factors, we can offer the right products in Kind that make sense for the consumers that we think are Kind consumers. So the way we're approaching it is actually right now simplifying, moving from 12 brands to only 3 brands, but making sure that they have a real story, that they mean something, that they have an identity, that we can build equity to these brands, and making sure that we offer, I'd say, a wide variety of products and form factors within those brands. So when we think of, a new edible or something like that, we're going to be thinking of how does that play into one of the three brands, rather than trying to create a new brand specifically for that. So that's more the approach that we're having. And you'll see in 24 that in the first half of 24, we'll be relaunching 3 brands and really trying to make sure that those brands make sense and offer what consumers want.
Nice. And when you're looking at the 2024 market, and I know I don't have you for too much longer, I appreciate the time that you've given so far. If brands and retailers should be looking at one specific thing across the next year, what would your advice be to be looking at? Should it be, looking at your product categories and your shelf space? Is it looking at your cash flow and making sure that you could survive the recession? Yeah. If you could give that one piece of advice, what would it be?
So if it were only one, to me, it remained in 2024, that cash preservation and making sure that we are in a healthy place as a company. And we've made, I think, tremendous progress this year on this. Well, first, a year ago, we had a $400 million debt that was due in 23 and 24 that we needed to take care of and make sure that we're moving that. Done. Checked. That moved to 2026. That was the first thing. The second thing was turning this company into a company that is cash flow positive. We moved the EBITDA from 18% a year ago to 25% now, getting into a good position from a operating cash flow and getting into free cash flow next year. So that's all that is talking to your first, I think the first key priority on cash preservation.
Sure.
But at the same time, and sorry, I'm giving more than one answer, but at the same time, again, it's a transition year, which means that we need to use that year as we've started, but to use that year to be ready for the future that I frankly see very bright for 2025 and beyond. And that means exactly what we talked about preparing the brands. That means really focusing on that retail focus, which is on building customer loyalty. And that goes without saying, but you cannot do all that without having really great products with a great quality to correspond to those brands. So first answer is cash preservation. And then the other three focus that we're having very clearly, one is continue to build customer relationship and loyalty. Two is building those brands and making sure that we create brands that have real equity. And three is making sure that we're manufacturing, processing products that have the right quality. So those are big picture, I'd say the key focus and key priorities.
Well, I look forward to seeing your continued success, not only here in the Nevada market, but I cannot wait for an adult use market to open up in Florida.
Well, I think that we're with you on this one and probably even more than you.
Yeah, I honestly, bated breath. I am so excited. Again, really appreciate your time and look forward to seeing what Air Wellness brings to you in the future.
Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
We would like to thank David for his time and being on today's episode. If you would like to find out more about Air Wellness, you can visit them online at www.airwellness.com. That'll do it for our second session here from MJ BizCon. Make sure to stay tuned as we have plenty more coverage from the show floor here on Conversations in Cannabis.